The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Democrats are pushing partisan legislation that will change how we conduct elections and how we can speak.
It's Nancy Pelosi's number one priority. In fact, the legislation is called H.R. 1. Now, here's what it would do. First,
H.R. 1 sends public dollars to fund political campaigns.
Not to build roads or bridges, but to add 600% to every small dollar donated by Americans. So let's say Mary from Michigan donates $200 to preferred candidate. Well, now you have just chipped in another $1,200. Second, H.R. 1 would legalize voting for convicted felons all over the country, even if they were convicted of election fraud. Does that make sense to you?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, that was Congressman McCarthy. I want to bring you up to speed on Senate Bill 1. You may not be familiar with that is, but important Senate bill, and I'll tell you how it all shook out. But before I get to that, I just want to thank you for tuning in, allowing me to be part of your afternoon. And I want to remind you, if you hear something on this show, and you tune in maybe a little bit late to it, my producer Jake always gets the entire broadcast up, probably about an hour after I sign off. But you can still go back to the podcast and listen to something that we talked about yesterday or last week or even last month. We archive all of our shows. All of the podcasts can be found there. And I think you'll find everything from current events and news to things that are spiritual to health issues such as the Novavax vaccine or the issue of loneliness or so many of the different things that we try to cover on the show. So tell others about the broadcast. You might be new to it. You might have only been listening for a short time. I am on every afternoon, 12 to 3 on the Pacific Coast and 3 to 6 on the East Coast and 2 to 5 in the Central Time Zone. So mark your watch, your calendars, and tune in. Tell others about it. Always give you a very unique look at life that I don't think you'll find anywhere else. I try not to wave a partisan flag. I try to look at these very critical issues, whether they're immigration or gun control or voting rights or whatever the issue might be, through the prism of our Catholic faith. And I think it's the best way of doing it because a lot of these issues really cross, you know, both sides of the aisles at times. So I think the most important thing to do is look at it through the lens of morality, a moral lens, right? And of course, you're welcome to join me anytime you want. I'm going to give you our number here. It's 888-914-9149. Feel free to dial in and, of course, sound off, okay? So you can just, you know, always good to have you here. It really is. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy hanging out with you, and I enjoy looking at those current events, those big issues of the day. And there was a bill I was not going to really address, but I thought about it earlier today, and I thought, let me just bring this before you, just so you understand what's happening. We live in a polarized, divided country, don't we? I mean, where your political flag, you know, that is your brand. That's your religion, unfortunately. People have turned politics into a religion, and they worship the altar of whatever party that they're at. And we see this on Capitol Hill. We see how close our Congress is, you know, and how deeply divided, Congress is. The first bill that was filed in the Senate, and you know, it was a bill in the current session of Congress that would have dramatically changed how Americans vote. And I've been talking about voting since before the election. And in a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a great guest who will be stopping by on votes to get you up to speed. But right now, voting regulations, they're mostly made by the states, right? That's why you can find, I don't know, different times for voter registrations from one state to another. States have different laws on who can vote by absentee ballot. There are some, of course, overarching federal positions, like a common day. We all have to vote on the same day, you know, for federal elections. And then really important laws, like laws prohibiting racial discrimination. But for the most part, when it comes to voting, it's the state. It's the state that runs the vote. And that's really the way it should be, because that's the way the Constitution says that it should work, right? But this Senate bill, SB1, that was introduced, it would have changed all that. And there are some big things that could have been required. Some of those are, for example, access to internet voter registration. Can you imagine that? Would I love to be able to vote over the internet? Would I love to be able to vote over my smartphone? Sure. My only concern is, you know, right now you can see how we're shutting down pipelines and power grids, right? People can do that. Don't you think they're going to find a way to hack the vote or your registration? You imagine how many people are going to register for a particular party? So what SB wanted to do was give people access to internet voter registration. And in theory, I love the idea, but in reality, I think it's probably problematic. They wanted the implementation of an automatic voter registration system. So the same day voter registration. So 15 days of early voting. They want at least 10 hours a day. And they want unrestricted voting by mail. And they also want voting drop boxes was the other thing. And it would have restricted the ability of states to purge names from their voter rolls. You know, it would have limited them from demanding a voter ID. I don't understand why people have this voter ID issue problem. You know, you need an ID to rent a car, don't you? Why shouldn't you have an ID to go ahead and to vote? I mean, think about how important that is. And what happens, you know, if somebody's able to perpetrate fraud? I mean, what that can do to policy, to national security, to a whole litany of things, to our country. I have no problem with it. It's ridiculous. These people don't want to have voter ID. Get an ID. You want to rent a car? You want to drive a car? You want to get on an airplane? You want to cash a check? You need an ID, right? You want to open a bank? You need an ID. You should have an ID to vote. I mean, don't underestimate the power of that. The bill also wanted to restrict this curbside voting, and it would have dictated that no person would have to wait more than 30 minutes to vote. And that sounds great too, but how realistic is that, right? So, as expected, the bill failed in the Senate yesterday. It was a split vote, though. The bill required a 60-vote minimum to pass the House because of a filibuster rule, and since the Senate is evenly split, it didn't go anywhere. But there are still a couple more bills that are similar. There are compromises that the Democrats are hoping to make that might have some legs. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, he's still going to try to get rid of the filibuster. He and Nancy Pelosi, they want to get rid of that filibuster. So that would at least reduce the number of votes required to overcome a filibuster. But with the with senators like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema saying, hey, we're not going to change filibuster rules, Schumer has an uphill battle ahead of him. So we'll see what happens. But as you can imagine, Schumer went off on Senate Republicans for blocking this vote. He was not happy.
Every single Senate Republican just voted against starting debate on legislation to protect Americans' voting rights. Once again, the Senate Republican minority has launched a partisan blockade of a pressing issue here in the United States Senate, an issue no less fundamental than the right to vote. I've laid out the facts for weeks. Republican state legislatures across the country are engaged in the most sweeping voter suppression in 80 years, capitalizing on and catalyzed by Donald Trump's big lie. These state governments are making it harder for younger, poorer, urban, and non-white Americans to vote.
So I'm joined right now by Jason Sneed. He is the executive director of the Honest Elections Project. He's been with us for months as we've been looking at everything from election voting to fraud to recounts. And now we're looking at SB1. You can find him at honestelections.org. Jason, welcome back.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this federal takeover of elections. Some people think, hey, it's not a bad idea to have commonality run across the states. We can set up a lot of things that would, you know, make things a lot easier. Why is a federal takeover rather than the states? And my personal opinion is I do believe it belongs in the hands of the states. But why would a federal takeover elections be so wrong in your estimation? Because a lot of people see some value in it.
Well, I don't disagree that there can be value in states having roughly comparable systems, but I do think that the best way to get there is to have states making decisions about how their elections are supposed to work, experimenting with ways to make elections better, and then replicating successes. That's one of the great strengths of the federal system. If a state makes a mistake or goes in the wrong direction, then it cabins the reach of the potential damage to only that state, and other states will learn from that failure and avoid that mistake. But if you federalize it, then of course you're running the risk that you're doing damage to the entire nation's election systems. And as we all know, it's very hard to get Congress to do anything, and that includes fixed problems from the past. The other reason that I think that this is best left at the states is because that's what the Constitution says. The Elections Clause says that states set the times, places, and manners of elections, the regulations, and so on and so forth. And while Congress can step in and write voting laws, that's true in some cases. I don't think that the framers of the Constitution contemplated a national election code where Congress writes all the details and micromanages everything. But that's essentially what S1 did.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Voter ID is something I have a problem with. I don't understand why people have such an issue with it. I was saying, look, you need an ID to rent a car, to cash a check, to get on a plane. You know, you need an ID for so many different things today. And the consequences of voter fraud or manipulation, you know, people can come in without an ID, have profound impact on the republic. Voter ID was prohibited under this bill, and yet it seems to be that a number of Democrats are they're starting to come around to accept that idea. Is there a shift now in Capitol Hill? Because this was a deal breaker for them for a long time. I mean, they did not want people to have to show an ID to vote. What's going on right now? Where are we on that particular issue?
Well, I will believe it when I see it in terms of a potential Democratic or progressive shift on this issue. We obviously saw Joe Manchin put his proposal forward that included a form of voter identification requirement. And then, to my surprise, we saw various progressive activists like Stacey Abrams in Georgia and even progressive politicians in the Senate suddenly embrace voter identification or ostensibly do so. But to be completely frank, I think what we're seeing is a more cynical political calculation than a genuine shift. I think what they've recognized is, you know, polling data consistently shows that the vast majority of Americans believes that voter ID is acceptable, has exactly the view that you just laid out. I have to show ID to board an airplane, to buy a beer. Tons of jurisdictions said you can't get a COVID vaccine to save your life without an ID. Right. And suddenly it's repugnant to ask for ID when it comes to our democracy, when it comes to voting. Right. And they've spent so much time and money trying to move the needle on that. And if anything, over the last decade, the American public has shifted more in favor of voter ID, not less. So I think that what they were looking for was just a way forward. But the question is, you know, what are the details of these proposals going to be? And particularly when it comes to activists like Stacey Abrams, you know, she may say that she is for voter ID. She has yet to actually see a voter ID law that she finds acceptable with specifics that is actually meaningful. And so I'm not sure I'm seeing much of a shift here. I think this is more just political posturing.
So Jason, break it down for those who don't know. SB1, who would it benefit the greatest? The Democrat Party, the Republicans? And why are they so divided over this? I would think that of all the issues on Capitol Hill that we will argue over, you know, this is one that you could probably find common ground pretty simply on, but give me your take.
Well, there are principled objections here, and I think that a lot of that fundamental disagreement comes down to, should the federal government be imposing rules on states when it comes to elections? So you might have politicians in Congress who are Democrats and Republicans and agree on particular provisions, right, and think that you know, I'm okay with 15 days of early voting, for instance. Let's just pick one of the particular provisions of H.R. 1. The Democratic politician, more likely than not, is going to say, well, then fine, let's make that the nationwide rule and have Congress do it. And the Republican politician is going to say, well, hold on a second. I don't think that's constitutional. I don't think we should be doing it at Congress and in Congress. I'm okay with it, but I think that my state should be doing that. So there's a fundamental tension there. And that's a point that I have been making a lot over the last few days. When I look at things like the Manchin proposal, I see a couple of provisions that I personally like. Voter identification laws, for instance. But still, the idea that that means that I should be then in favor of Congress imposing that, that's a step beyond. And so we might be able to agree in principle, but there is a disagreement, I think, about the appropriate level of government to do this. And I think that we should be keeping as much government as possible as close to the people, and that includes our election system.
Yeah, no, I agree with you for sure. All right, if you want to join us, our number 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. You're more than welcome to sound off and share your own views. We're talking about Senate Bill 1 and the latest there. There were a couple of compromise bills that are also out there. What do you make of those? Do they resolve any of the issues that the Republicans had with SB 1?
I'm not sure. I think that everyone is still trying to figure out what the next steps will likely be. I certainly have read some of the headlines that have characterized a different bill, H.R. 4, the Voting Rights Advancement Act, as a moderate compromise. But having looked at its provisions and understanding what it does, I actually think that the folks on the left that are pushing for that bill to be the next issue in Congress see it more as a backup plan for S1 than a genuinely moderate compromise. It would still give Washington the ability to control state election laws. It still targets practices that fringe activists do not like voter ID laws or better procedures for cleaning up voter rolls, and then gives the federal government the ability to block any state law in every state that attempts to strengthen or bolster or improve those laws. So it's actually, it's quite expansive, and I don't think that it is a moderate compromise at all. But of course, you know, we'll have to see going forward. Again, though, it really does come down, I think, to a simple question of should Congress be doing these sorts of things? And I think that the answer in most cases is no.
So on another issue, Chuck Schumer would love to get rid of the filibuster rule. What do you think is going to happen there? Of course, we know Sinema and Manchin are both saying no. So it looks like that's dead. But give me your take on the filibuster.
Well, look, the filibuster is an important part of the Senate, and I say that as someone who is not a Senate parliamentarian or anything else, but it fundamentally operationalizes a concept which is pretty consistently has been consistently part of the American experiment, and that is the idea that you have to find compromise. And you know what? If you can't find compromise and you don't wind up with sweeping federal change, that's not the end of the world. The idea that that bipartisanship should be eschewed when it's not appropriate or when it's not, you know, leading to a particular outcome, I think that's a very short-sighted and narrow-minded view. The enduring solutions, as Senator Sinema from Arizona wrote the other day, the enduring solutions are the ones that get bipartisan support, are the ones where you do the hard work of finding a way forward, where you're not getting two sides that are compromising on principles, but you're finding two sets of principles where you can find some common ground and move ahead together. And I think that the filibuster is an important part of that. And if we lose that, then we lose effectively one of the great checks and bulwarks on liberty.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's take a few calls. I have a few moments with Jason Snead. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. Barb is listening in North Liberty, Iowa. Sounds like a beautiful place. Hi, Barb.
Hey, good evening. Good afternoon. Hi, guys. Has Senator Schumer ever said anything as to why it's okay to have to show an ID for check cashing or via beer, as Drew said, but not for voter ID?
That's a great question, Barb. Jason, are you familiar with that? Have you ever heard him justify why they don't need voter ID?
You know, I don't think that he has addressed that particular thing head on, and that is a perfectly reasonable question to ask of someone who has used some, I think, particularly vitriolic rhetoric surrounding identification laws. This is voter suppression, that it's the new Jim Crow. You know, that kind of rhetoric just doesn't land with people, and that's why we've got polling data that shows that in fact, the overwhelming majority of Black voters, Hispanic voters, low-income voters, even 60% of Joe Biden voters in the 2020 presidential election all think that photo ID should be required to vote. It's a very basic idea, and it's not controversial outside of some of the more extreme, you know, kind of progressive activist types who have decided for the last decade or so that they want to do away with these provisions. The reality is, and this is part of the reason that they don't want to address that issue head on, but just use these hyperbolic attacks, is that when a state requires a form of voter identification to vote, they usually create lists of lots of acceptable forms of ID They give free IDs to people who can't afford to get something like a driver's license. And in Georgia in particular, they also allowed for the new law that they put in place in absentee ballots for you to use the last four digits of your social security number, which of course every citizen has, or even a utility bill if you don't have that. So the idea that these laws are discriminatory or stopping people from voting is just wrong, and I think that they would prefer to avoid the issue than address it.
Yeah, that's for sure. My guest today, Jason Sneed from Honest Elections. You can check him out online at honestelections.org. I've only have a moment left. I'm curious about this previous election, the Trump-Biden election. There was a recount in Arizona. They were looking at that. What's the latest on that presidential election, and what changes are we going to see when it comes to the vote in the midterms and the next election? I know you've been following all that. What's the latest?
Well, I think we're waiting to see how these audits play out, and I'm going to reserve judgment on them until I see the final sets of facts, and we'll take a close look at that. In terms of the way that things will proceed into 2022, I'm optimistic. A lot of the changes that have been adopted in states across the country have been tightening up the nuts and bolts of the way elections work, bringing greater security to the process, and hopefully bringing some greater confidence for voters along with it. So I'm optimistic about 22.
I am too. Yeah, I was saying before you came on, I would love to be able to vote over the internet or my cell phone, but the possibility of hacking and fraud is way too great. Do you think we'll ever get to a place where you won't have to be in person to vote, that the technology will be secure enough that somebody can cast a ballot remotely?
You know, I mean, I don't know when I can see that. I'm sure there will be a day, right? I mean, once upon a time, people said, man will never fly, and then we had the Wright brothers come along.
Right.
But I think that we're a long way away from that sort of technology being able to be deployed where you can reliably say that right, there will be no risk of hacking or anything else. But, you know, I think we might see that day, but like I said, it's a long way.
I'm with you. Never say never, right? Never say never. We probably
exactly
will one day. Look at how things change. It's amazing. Hey, Jason, I know you had a busy day. I appreciate your time. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
It's Jason Sneed. You can check him out. It's at honestelections.org. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, you know, I often monitor the media, what they say that is honest and what is not. There's been some polls out from a number of very reputable places, and they dealt with a couple things. They dealt with Catholics. They dealt with communion. They dealt with Joe Biden. I want to shed some light on that when I come back. I think you'll find it telling. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
One last question.
Sure.
Does the president believe that a 15-week-old unborn baby is a human being?
Are you asking me if the president supports a woman's right to choose? He does. Go ahead.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, Joe Biden is a strong man of faith, and as he noted just a couple of days ago, it's personal. He goes to church, as you know, nearly every weekend. He even went when we were on our overseas trip. But it's personal to him. He doesn't see it through a political prism, and we're not going to comment otherwise on the inner workings of the Catholic Church.
Jen, come on. That is so frustrating. You know, they ask her, you know, is a 15-week-old, you know, fetus or baby in the womb a human being? Is it a child? If you're asking if Joe Biden believes in a woman's right to choose, you know, whatever. I mean, you hear the total spin. It's the answer was something that wasn't even asked. And then the cop-out is all faith, the personal thing. You know, we're not going to discuss this or the inner workings of the church. We're not asking you to talk about the inner workings of the church. That's not what this is about. You know, why do you have to duck and evade? Why not just answer honestly and directly? Why not? Joe Biden knows he's in the wrong. He absolutely, you know, I'm not going to diminish his intellect. He's a Catholic. I think he loves his faith. I do. But I don't think he is willing to trade his power, his position, his version of the faith for the hard choice that it is to really be in communion with the church. And I don't think it's that hard. I love my faith. I'm on fire for my faith. And I saw, I think it was the president of Malta who said he'd step down before he'd sign a pro-abortion bill. You know, I saw that the other day somewhere, and I'm thinking, what about our own elected officials? They are so willing to throw their faith, you know, in the gutter and worship at the altar of abortion than really do what is right, just, and moral. And that should trouble every American. These are people who have to make moral decisions about the use of weaponry, engagement in war, policy, international affairs, a whole litany of other things, health care. So when somebody comports themselves, conducts themselves in matters as obvious as defending an innocent life in the womb and is willing to throw that to the side and is willing to wear their faith on their sleeve like a badge of honor, you should give everybody pause. That's just me personally. You know, you may disagree with that, and I'm sure many people do. You might say, yeah, Drew, I agree totally. We're living in a wacky time, a strange time where, you know, I look at some of the media, and I'm not here to throw stones at them constantly, but they are propaganda arms for political parties. You look at the people they put, the spin they approach the subject matter with, the mantra and the words, the lexicon that they use. It really is frustrating to me. And then you take a look at polls, and I do want to talk about some polls because the media has been very misleading about Catholics and politicians. And I want to blow away the smoke. I want to clear the fog. I want to help you understand a really important issue. Michael New is going to be stopping by in a second. I'm going to tap into his expertise. He wrote a great article. We'll post it for you too. I saw this early today and read it and said to one of my producers, let's talk about this. This is an important issue just to give people clarity, to let them truly put their finger on the pulse of what's happening. So you'll be in the know. You won't be deceived by so many of the smoke and mirrors that are out there. And it's, I personally believe we live in interesting times. You know, it's interesting that only, you know, the only time when the secular media show any interest in Catholic sacramental theology is when there's a possibility that a pro-abortion politician might be denied communion. Do you notice everybody's up in arms over this? I mean, when did this become such an issue, right? Why did it become such an issue? The obsession, I'll give you a little history. It started back in 2004. When the then newly installed Archbishop of St. Louis, you know, Archbishop Raymond Burke at the time, he's now a cardinal, he was asked a really tough question. He was asked if he would deny communion to the then presidential candidate, John Kerry. John Kerry's, of course, a Catholic. And if the campaign were to, if the Kerry campaign were in St. Louis, what would he do if John Kerry came up to receive the Eucharist? The Archbishop responded that he would and deny him communion. And that began, you know, the press communion watch, if you will, going to Mass when John Kerry went to Mass to see if he would be denied or not. It never happened. So we're now back to the future. That was 2004, right? Let's come back to our own time. All of a sudden, we have a media concerned again about sacramental theology. But only because it might impact the American political system, most especially the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, right? They're worried about how it's going to impact the president. And the media, of course, they're all in favor of the president being able to receive communion. They also think that Catholics are all in favor as well. And, you know, believe it or not, there are some Catholics out there who think, yeah, Joe Biden should be able to receive communion. It's fine. And what they do is they cite a Pew Research poll. And I we've talked about this before. I want to dive into it a little bit deeper with you today. Pew Research poll showed that 67% of Catholics think Catholic politicians who disagree with church teaching on abortion should still be permitted to take communion. They should still be able to receive the sacrament. I'd love somebody to explain that one to me. Now, how do you justify that? The same number of Catholics, according to Pew, said that President Biden specifically should be allowed to receive communion if he presents himself. But here's the key understanding to those numbers, and this is why I wanted to deal with this with you. Who are the people being polled? Has anybody asked that question? Anybody looked into that? Who's being polled? Are these practicing Catholics that they're asking? People who go to Mass every Sunday? You know, are they going to Mass regularly? Were they informed in their faith like you? Poll never bothered to ask that question. So CatholicVote.org, I know you know Brian Birch, he's been on the program, it's a great organization. They decided to ask that question, and they did their own survey or poll. They came up with very different results. And I'm joined today by Michael New. He's here to help us unpack this and reveal what's been sold to the American people. He's an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and a research associate at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. And follow him. He's got a great Twitter account. It's Michael_J_New. It's Michael_J_New. You can follow him there. New spelled N-E-W. And he wrote about this issue yesterday at the National Review. And when I saw the story, I said, you know what? Let's bring some clarity. That's what we're here to do. Let's make sure people understand the truth. Michael, thank you for doing this. I enjoyed your piece. We're going to link over to it on our Twitter page. It's good to have you back.
It's great to be back.
So we know what Pew reported on. There's some questions there, but tell us what Catholic Vote found in their survey.
Well, sure. I mean, Catholic Vote found that 74% of Catholics who attend Mass believe that Catholic public officials who disagree with the Church on serious or grave matters should avoid creating disunity by not presenting themselves to communion. More importantly, 83% said that Catholic politicians who oppose church teachings do create confusion and disunity. So when you look at what this CatholicVote.org poll did, it, unlike Pew, polled Catholics who actually attend Mass. That's kind of one of the big problems of the Pew poll. They just looked at self-identified Catholics. The CatholicVote.org poll looked at Mass attendees. And when you poll Mass attendees, typically, you get different results, as you did here. And it's just pretty clear that those who attend Mass on a consistent basis tend to be a lot more sympathetic to the idea that those Catholic public officials who, frankly, disagree with the Church on important matters, like abortion, really ought not to present themselves for communion.
Yeah, my guest today is Michael New. If you want to join us, I have him for a few moments today. You can sound off as well, 888-914-9149. So the people who were surveyed, let's talk about this because these numbers come up. People take them as Bible. You know, they take them as absolute truth. Do we know if they surveyed Republican voters, Democrat voters? What was the political breakdown in the vote?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the Pew poll did come up with a breakdown, and they did find in general that Republican voters were a little more sympathetic to the idea that President Biden, you know, ought not to receive communion. The CatholicVote.org poll, which looked at Mass attendees, was actually very diverse politically. This didn't look at necessarily conservative Catholics. The CatholicVote.org poll actually found that at least a plurality of people supported or approved of the job that Joe Biden is doing as president. Plurality also voted for Joe Biden in the 2020 election. So again, this wasn't necessarily a poll of quote-unquote conservative Catholics, but even you just look at simply those Catholics who attend Mass consistently, you know, they were pretty clear that they thought that those politicians who, again, disagree with the Church on important matters really ought not to present themselves for communion. So again, it's just always very important to poll consistent Mass attendees. Sadly, there's a lot of people who identify as Catholic who don't attend Mass. These Catholics typically tend to disagree with the Church on a whole host of matters. When you look at frequent Mass attendees, you get different results, and that's really borne out by this CatholicVote.org poll.
Yeah, that's so true. All right, well, let's take a few calls for you, okay? 888-914-9149. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. Michael, we'll go to Dan. He's listening in Downers Grove. He's up first. Dan, hi, you're on the air with Michael New.
Hi, guys. First of all, my comments are, number one, the Eucharist is the pinnacle of our faith. And for these politicians to weaponize the Eucharist is awful. So the main problem is, and we have to bring them back to this, the politicians I'm saying, is the fact that abortion is the problem that they're trying to shelter or hide from, I should say. And they're trying to make it about the Eucharist. Let's bring them back to abortion, which is murder. Make them at least repent of that, and then move on to the Eucharist as they can receive it when they're going to confession and going through the proper channels.
Dan, I like your approach. I wish it worked. The problem is, I wonder if they really believe it's murder. I mean, they have to. And Michael, you know, this is for you as well, so let's talk about it. Where I sit, it's clearly the destruction of a human life, and I don't know how anyone can dispute that, right? And yet you see a lot of these politicians talk about a woman's right, they don't even acknowledge the child in the womb. So to get them to recognize that abortion is wrong, that it's murder, is really the first step, as Dan points out. If you can accept that, then clearly you're going to want to receive orderly. But let's pick up on that particular point. I mean, there's this tremendous disconnect in the culture today, especially with politicians that totally avoid that reality. But President Obama said it was above his pay grade. This is a well-educated man. It's not above your pay grade. If your life depended on it and somebody said true or false, this is a human life, he'd probably get it right. But give me your take.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's, you know, what's obviously driving, you know, the concern about President Biden receiving communion is the fact that he does support legal abortion. And frankly, I hate to say it, but he's gotten worse on this issue. The U.S. senator, even though he supported legal abortion, at one point he opposed taxpayer funding of abortion. That's not the case anymore. President Biden released a budget a few weeks ago that called for the repeal of the Hyde Amendment. So it's the position of President Biden that abortion should not only be legal, but should be paid for with taxpayer dollars. And again, if no one's making him do this, he could have submitted a budget like his predecessors that include the Hyde Amendment. But when President Biden, in a very visible public way, is calling for the expansion of access to abortion and calling for taxpayer funding of abortion, it's just very clear that, yeah, he's persisting in grave sin and really ought not to present himself for communion.
Yeah, all right, we'll go back to the phones. Let's go to Todd in Lexington, Kentucky. And by the way, if you want to join us, 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at the media misleading many Catholics about politicians and some of the polls that have come out. Michael New wrote a great piece on it. He joins us today. Todd is listening in Lexington, Kentucky. Todd, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. If 70% of Catholics don't believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, is Joe Biden in that 70%? And at that point, would he even consider that receiving the body of Christ unworthily in communion is a sacrilege? So it's not a big deal to him. Yeah. Or any of the other politicians, for that matter.
It's a great point. And Todd, I can't speak to Joe Biden's heart or what he believes regarding the Eucharist, but you would think if you're a Catholic, then you accept that tenet of our faith. It's the source and summit of our faith, that Jesus is truly present, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist. And again, I credit Joe as being an intelligent man. You don't become president of the United States, you know, without having some intelligence. And so clearly he knows and either doesn't acknowledge it or, you know, something worse. He's just profaning the Eucharist. Michael, I'll take your take on it. You know, does Biden believe in the Eucharist? I can't answer that question. I would hope he does. And if he does, I hope he'd receive it worthily. But maybe he's in that 73% of people who believe it's a symbol. But if so, why go to Mass?
I can't speak for President Biden on that. But sadly, yeah, many Catholics don't believe that the Eucharist is the real presence of the body of Christ. I think some people would just have been poorly catechized. I'm not sure they're consciously rejecting that teaching insofar as they were just never taught properly in the first place. But essentially, I think that if you don't believe that the Eucharist represents the body and blood of Christ, I think it becomes a lot easier for people to receive it unworthily. And again, I don't know what's in Joe Biden's mind right now. I don't know what's running around his head. But I agree, the fact that people have been poorly catechized, I think, is a problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. On there's two points here. One, I had a friend that I went to Catholic school with for 8 years. He didn't go to the same Catholic high school I went to, but yeah, I often share the story. We played racquetball years later together, a couple times a week, and we went out for a beer afterwards. And first, I was talking about the faith. I was really getting back into my faith pretty passionately. And I was talking about a Eucharistic miracle. We were talking about true presence, and he says, true presence? What are you talking about? It's just a symbol. Lord said, do this in remembrance. And I thought, man, didn't we go to the same school? Didn't we both receive the sacrament of of the Eucharist at the same time? But apparently he didn't know, or he learned wrong. There's a lot of people, to your point, who I do think do not know the faith. And as a result, that's why they conduct themselves this way. And I think that's unfortunate. I think we do have a crisis of catechesis in the country. I think that's why that other Gallup poll or Pew poll came out and showed that, 2/3 of Catholics or 73% of Catholics don't believe in the true presence. And that's why I really want to credit our bishops who really want to bring back a new focus on the Eucharist. So we're going to see that in November with this document that comes out. I think we need a revitalization of belief, teaching, and love and respect for the Eucharist. I think that's coming. I think that can change some things. I take a short break, but when I come back, we'll talk more. We'll grab a few more of your calls. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Stay with us. There's more coming up right ahead.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Let me just say that I'm a big supporter of Roe v. Wade. I am a mother of 5 children in 6 years. I think I have some standing on this issue as to respecting a woman's right to choose. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the way that interview started, just to give you some context on that soundbite, a reporter asked her the question, is a child in the womb, Jake, what's the actual quote? Say fetus, I don't know what the exact term was. Is a 15-week-old child in the womb a human being? And Nancy Pelosi, like Joe Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, spun, I've got 5 kids in 6 years. I can speak about Roe v. Wade. It's like, that's not what we asked. You know, these politicians, and again, look, we've talked about this a lot. It's frustrating to me. Who are Catholic, they're not really Catholic. You're not Catholic if you don't believe Christ is truly present in the Eucharist. I don't think you're a Catholic if you continue to advance policies that are diametrically opposed to the teachings of Jesus Christ and in the church that you profess belief in. You're not a Catholic. You're a Protestant. You are protesting what the church teaches. You know, I don't think you should call yourself Catholic. You can wave your rosary beads. You can talk about how many kids you have. But you will one day stand before God, and you're going to have to account for the great gift that he gave you and the position that you had to advance the common good, to defend life, and to be true to the gospel, to be true to the teachings of Jesus Christ. And these are our brothers and our sisters. And I just say to you, as we deal with this, I'm not throwing stones at these people. It's a call for us to pray for them. You know, God loves them infinitely, and he wants them to be with him for all eternity. But hell is also a real place. There's consequence for sin, and the rejection of God and his law. And I think we're seeing this played out on the public stage very clearly. And it's disturbing to me. It should be disturbing to all of us. I'm joined today by Michael New. He wrote a piece, which you can find at our Twitter page. We linked over to it at Drew Mariani Show. And it was a great piece in which he took a look at some recent polling that had been done. Michael, thank you for being back here with us. He hails, by the way, if you're just tuning in, from the Charlotte Lozier Institute and also the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. The title of your article, once again, it's escaping my mind.
Well, I just talk about how the mainstream media misleads on Catholic attitudes toward the reception of communion. And you know, essentially that, again, Pew did a poll back in March that was getting quite a lot of attention from a lot of mainstream media outlets about Catholic politicians who support abortion and whether or not they should be allowed to go to communion. And the problem with the Pew poll, or at least the Pew poll results that were getting attention, was the fact they looked at, again, self-identified Catholics.
Right.
You know, these are people who may not go to Mass or may go to Mass, you know, very infrequently. So one thing I've learned through my study of public attitudes is this denominational affiliation doesn't really tell you all that much. If you really want to get good insights into what people think, you often have to look at church attendance. And not surprisingly, when you look at Catholics who attend Mass on a weekly basis, they are a lot more likely to reject the idea that President Biden should present himself for communion. They're more likely to reject the idea that other pro-abortion Catholic politicians should present themselves for communion. So CatholicVote.org, again, did a very useful poll where they made it a point to ask people who, again, ask Catholics who attend Mass, and again, they found a lot more support for the idea that, you know, again, Catholics who disagree with important church teachings, you know, frankly, should not present themselves for communion.
Now, what's the title of your article, though, Mike? What was the actual title?
Mainstream Media Misleads on Catholic Attitudes Toward Communion.
All right, great. We have it on Twitter. I just want to make sure if anybody else wants to do a search for it, they have it. We'll take a few calls. Phyllis is listening in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Phyllis, good afternoon.
the reason I'm calling is I think that it's really important for the church to take a stand. However, I feel like they're kind of walking on eggshells with all the pedophilia lawsuits that we've had in the past. But in my opinion, I would like to see them take more of a hard stand, especially with elected officials. Elected officials that are pro-abortion are wearing their sin on their sleeve. They're saying, yeah, this is what I believe I want to do. But yet, they go to communion. And I think that our bishops are in a good position right now to say, okay, yeah, the church makes mistakes, but we're not budging on the dogma. This is the dogma. This is what we believe in. And re-educate the masses again. I mean, there's a lot of Catholics. However, I really believe Biden and Pelosi are of the generation that really know that, you know, if they're Catholics, they know that the body and blood of Christ is on that altar. So I just think that the pool of politics and power is a lot.
Well, I agree with you. I think they know what the church teaches, especially when the bishops and this controversy comes up. Clearly, they have to know and believe that. So I'm with you on that point. In terms of the bishops, Phyllis, there have been some great bishops out there. Bishop Thomas Papraki joined me, I think, on Monday earlier in this week, and we talked about what the bishops were doing at the USCCB meeting and the document they're going to come out with. And it's not just targeting politicians, it's targeting all Catholics. Because, look, we can look at the public politicians who dissent and advance a culture of death, but I think of the people that are living immoral lifestyles, cohabitating, those that we know that are also receiving the Eucharist and are in a sinful lifestyle. And that document will address everybody. Another one, Archbishop Cordiglione from San Francisco, he was another one that was very vocal on this issue. So we've got a number of bishops, Bishop Nauman and so many others who've been speaking out on it. But I love your point. I think you bring up a great one. And Mike, I'll let you respond as well to Phyllis's comments.
Right. I think that Phyllis makes some very good points. I mean, one thing I've always felt is I think this would be a really good teaching moment. All too often when you hear about someone not being allowed to present themselves for communion, it involves a Catholic politician who supports abortion. But I think that, you know, it goes broader than that. To be perfectly honest, there's a lot of Catholics, in my opinion, and again, I don't mean to sound judgmental, but I just think there's a lot of people who probably ought not to present themselves. If people are cohabiting, if people have viewed pornographic materials, if they've, engaged in serious lying or misleading people, if they've committed, you know, financial sins. You know, there's a lot of grave sins that would disqualify somebody from presenting themselves for communion. And I think that just teaching people about, you know, the appropriateness of when to present oneself and when to go to confession first, I think that would be just a great benefit to Catholics nationally. Again, I think this could be a very important, very powerful teaching moment that I hope the bishops take advantage of.
Yep. All right. George in Rhode Island, you're next. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. One of the pieces about this that I think, and you actually alluded to it just now, that gets lost in the shuffle here is our Catholic identity. If you don't stand for certain things, eventually it just will not injure the people who those things affect outside of your group, but it will destroy your own group. If I have a child who decides to use drugs and I say, if you use drugs, you can't live here. And 2 years later, he's still living in my house and he has friends with him living there. Well, my house has fallen. And I want to know where the Pope is. Where is he? It's a very, very heartbreaking time for us.
Well, George, thanks for your call. And I want, of course, Michael, you to respond, but I think George's point about Catholic identity now being crucial. I think we are at a really important moment, and I do think our nation's bishops are going to come out with a very clear document. And I also know that a lot of bishops speak to these elected officials behind the scenes. They speak to them personally, and I'd love to know what that conversation was about. But we do have to stand for the truth. I think it's a great time to be witnesses for Christ, and the true presence is a great moment to be a witness in the culture to not just Catholics, but to non-Catholics as well. I'll let you respond to George, and we'll try to sneak Peter in as well before we run out of time here.
Right. I think that, you know, to a certain extent, having really Catholic attitudes on a lot of important contemporary public policy issues is countercultural. But we have to be, you know, a light. We have to spread the good word. You know, we have to be visible in our faith. And I think that, you know, the bishops have to help us with that. Again, I think that, you know, we need to establish clear rules about presenting oneself for communion that pertains to President Biden, and it pertains to our friends and neighbors in the pews. So, again, I think that we live in very challenging times, but also very important times. You know, we can there's a lot of threats to the faith, but there's also lots of opportunities as well, and we should take advantage of that.
Well, Michael, it's always great to have you. I am grateful for your time. My apologies to everyone on hold. It's an issue I'm sure will get much more air in the days ahead. If you missed any part of it and you want to revisit it, simply go to relevantradio.com. Check out my podcast. Jake will have this up in about an hour. Feel free to write to us, drew@relevantradio.com. And check us out on Twitter. You'll find Michael's article and the breakdown of those poll and Catholic vote surveys at Drew Mariani Show. Kale Clark is coming up straight ahead. Stay tuned for that. I'll be back again in about 21 hours. We'll hang out then, okay? I look forward to it. In the meantime, count on my prayers. I appreciate a prayer for me and my family as well if you do that. Till tomorrow. God bless. Have a great afternoon.